Are you drinking beer, Paul? Was that beer I saw?
Water.
A little early. Oh, okay.
This is the Meteor Club Podcast, a weekly roundtable discussion about all things Meteor.
Hello, Meteor fans. Thank you, and welcome to another Meteor Club Podcast. With me, Ben Strahan, and Josh Owings. Today, we're going to be talking about analytics with Rye Walker from Astronomer and Paul Dowman from OK Grow. Good morning, guys.
Hey, guys.
Hey, hi.
So, Rye, tell us a little bit about yourself and Astronomer.
Okay, cool. I didn't know I'd have to be up first, but I'll go. I started Differential back in 2013 with Josh, as some of you maybe know in the Meteor historical records, those things happened. But more recently, I've left Differential to pursue a kind of a pure tech startup, one where I'm not trading my time for money. I'm just trading my time for no money at the moment. But Astronomer is basically a service to help solve the problem that we were facing a lot with a product we were working on called User Cycle, which is that most companies don't have their customer data in a good place. You know, a lot of them are just pushing data straight to Kissmetrics or Mixpanel, and that creates a situation when they want to do more with it, but they don't have a copy of it, essentially. Pretty crufty processes to remedy that problem down the road. So send the data through a proxy service that gives you a copy of all your data right back in an S3 and a way to replay that data to new services and things like that. So there's a bunch of like little problems around this data that we're trying to solve.
Mm-hmm. And make it as simple as possible for people to integrate.
Absolutely. Like, it's all developer focused. So just in the same way, in the same spirit of Meteor, you know, where developer happiness is critical, I think it's true for this service as well. And honestly, like, some of the solutions that are out in the market right now are pretty good, but they don't solve all the problems that we're aiming to solve here in 2015. So it's a kind of a look at the stuff that Segment does, but maybe going a little deeper on a few things.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And right now it's like, it's pretty Meteor specific too, right? Like, I installed it in like 4 minutes and 26 seconds or 20 seconds. So
420.
I dare anyone to be faster.
Did you see I have a leaderboard on the website now?
Do you really? That's funny.
Yeah. You're immortalized right now.
Nice. That's awesome. And Paul, tell us a little bit about yourself, man.
So I'm Paul Dowman, and I'm the founder of OK Grow. I'm not an analytics expert, but it's just something that we've always done. And it's something that I've always encouraged our clients to do. So I think in general, I'm just a big proponent of data-driven development. For me, it's not about optimizing conversion or, like, you know, getting an extra 5% on your signups button, but it's more about understanding what features get used so you can actually make a better product.
Yeah.
And, you know, honestly, for most of what we do, most of our clients are launching a new product, and it's the kind of thing where they're not going to have the volume to be optimizing anything. And the most important thing that you want to do when you launch a new product is you're not about optimizing. You're about it's about discovery and just making sure that you're building the right thing. And you can't do that without knowing what's being used, how many people are using it, and what they're not using. So we've always encouraged our clients to do that. We've just always put analytics in as just a standard thing that we do. It's not really an optional thing. And so we have a package that we have published on Atmosphere, which was just extracted from what we did ourselves. And it supports pretty much every analytics platform because it uses analytics.js, which is an open source client-side only plugin. Well, not client-side only, but it's an open source plugin from Segment that doesn't actually use their Segment backend. So I have a feeling we'll get a lot more into Segment, and Rye can probably talk a lot about that as well. Yeah.
Very cool. Thanks, guys, for joining us today.
Thanks.
Yeah, so I think for me, like, I've seen data-driven decisioning, right? Like, I've seen that happen before when I worked at Outright. Like, the former CTO there, like, gave a great talk. I'll have to see if I can find it on YouTube. And it was, like, all about putting metrics behind. You know, they would put fake buttons in place and see how many people, like, clicked on it to see if people really want to log in using Facebook to, like, be that login method for getting into your accounting app. And, you know, it turned out like that wasn't super interesting, even though the investors were saying, well, you got to have it, you got to have it. He's like, well, we're only showing like 2% of the people are actually interested in it. So like, I don't think you're right. So we're like not going to develop that feature. And I thought that was kind of an interesting approach. So it's interesting that you brought that up. Do you guys do that a lot at OK Grow then?
Yeah, I mean, I'd say most of what we do is like launching new products. And so we generally set people up to be in a position to measure anything that they want after they launch, because then the next iteration you'll do is just figure out what to focus on. Actually, I love that idea of like putting in a fake thing and just seeing how, or like a, you know, a link or a button that just comes to a coming soon page or whatever, and then you can record some information about it. I don't think we've actually done that specifically. I like the idea of that. But yeah, you'll get to see who's using what features, and also just kind of get like a standard thing that we'll do is create a funnel, which is just a simple kind of chart in your analytics tool like Mixpanel that lets you see where people are dropping off. So you could have, if you have 3 or 4 things that are steps in a row towards something that you want to happen, like creating an account, for example, you might have step one being visited the landing page, step two being, you know, scroll down or, you know, whatever, hopefully not scroll down. Maybe you'll have your, it's just 2 steps in this case. You've got your call to action right in the above the fold. But so then you'll just see how many people dropped off between doing each of those actions. So maybe step one is visited. Step two is click the start now button. Step three is actually submitted the sign up form. Step four is maybe created your first whatever piece of content that your app is for creating, something like that.
So listening to you talk, it's like traditionally, like marketing, we have our sales funnels. Kind of like what you're talking about is kind of like a user experience or like a success matrix for the app kind of funnel. And where to invest with marketing, you want to invest your dollars in the funnel that's working the best. And with what you're kind of, how I'm hearing it is you want to invest your engineering dollars in the right direction. And if something's not working, refactor it, or stuff that is working, like get behind it.
Yeah. Well, I think a lot of this boils down to like user engagement and like pirate metrics and kind of doing all that kind of stuff. And that's where actually user cycles started, right, Rye?
Yeah. I was going to say like this, you know, the pirate metrics thing. And the thing I would mention too, that, you know, Paul mentioned that funnel, the thing that happens whenever you launch a product, something in there is a zero, right? So the final result is generally going to be like 0 activated users per day. So yeah, the numbers really don't matter until you can start like figuring out why people don't fill out the sign up form or why they don't even click the sign up button. But yeah, user cycle was before we got involved as Differential, basically a pirate metrics dashboard. We kind of simplified it down to be just a retention dashboard, because I have the opinion that the most important metric that matters at early stage, like after you launch, is how many active users you have. It's a number you really can't fake. And it's a really depressing number in a lot of ways, but it is something you can influence through talking to customers, right? And like really holding their hand and figuring out what they like or what they don't like about the product. So yeah, user cycle was all about that. The problem, of course, as I mentioned, was like we couldn't get customers to send us data. All we needed was when they signed up and a stream of activity from the app, and like, It's just tricky. Now, when you have great people like OK Grow working on the app, and they set the app up by default to send the right amount of the right data, it's a little bit easier. But you know, a lot of people just really even haven't instrumented their app for user analytics. You know, once you have a bigger app, it seems like a daunting task to put all that stuff in. It really isn't. It takes a few hours probably, but yeah, it's just one of those things that maybe they think, hey, we have Google Analytics, we kind of have some data, we're good. I think it's a big mistake. I think knowing exactly how many users are using your app, from which cohort, all that kind of stuff is pretty critically important early on.
So I just heard a word that just like made me think really quick. So a lot of people just default to Google Analytics, and more we're seeing more niche products and also more robust products coming out. So it's like either side of the spectrum, like you got a lot more powerful and a lot more niche, mm-hmm. or brevity, I guess, more brevity and then more niche. So from your guys' point of view, like what's the case for like using some stuff in addition to Google Analytics to people who are just using that right now?
Like we've always liked Mixpanel. We used to use Kissmetrics a bit, then they started charging more for it or making it just kind of more difficult for us to like get our customers signed up on like a $50 or $100 plan. So Mixpanel is free below a certain usage level, and it's just a little bit easier. And so the big difference, which is not actually strictly true anymore, but originally Google Analytics was more sort of oriented around page tracking and tracking page views. And then, but really the thing that you want to do with an app is more around tracking events. So you want to track what actions people are performing. Like, did you click this button? Which might result in another page view being triggered, but not necessarily. Did you view this thing? And then being able to graph those things together. And so I think Mixpanel is just a little bit easier to do those things. Google does support tracking events as well. I don't know. I find Google's interface very complicated, very difficult to use. And like I said, I'm not an expert in analytics. I like to get people set up doing some of the basic stuff and just measuring anything and not get overwhelmed with all the things that you could be doing.
Yeah, I've mentioned that Google Analytics for me is for websites, you know, content basically, but it doesn't really do a great job of user analytics or user, anything related to specific people. It's all like aggregated, generalized sort of data. It's perfect for when you need to figure out where your content sources are. Well, it's not perfect for that because there's always this big chunk of like, we don't know where they came from.
Yeah.
Really? How do you not know that? I think there is a good answer to that question, but it always bugs me. There's another tool that we like now called Indicative. You know, there's a bunch of tools that are trying to knock Kissmetrics and Mixpanel off the block, of course. There's hundreds of them, you know. Some of them are, like you said, Ben, they're niche, they're smaller. And the nice thing is, you can send your data to multiple tools, especially with a tool like Segment or Astronomer. And the extra benefits you get from that can be pretty interesting. I definitely think there's a big difference, and it's hard. Like a lot of people don't quite get the difference, especially if they've never built an app. You know, like unless you have an app with users who sign in, Google Analytics will take care of you, I think.
Yeah. So the downside of Google Analytics, they do have event tracking, right? And you can go in and instrument your code and like fire off an event to Google Analytics, which I did for like the Meteor Club site, like just seeing how far people were scrolling down the page. But then at the end of the day, like it wasn't super helpful because I couldn't see like the funnel, like where did they come in from? Like I could see maybe the source, but I couldn't track like where all they clicked through the website once they came in. And so I found that like it just wasn't quite flexible enough. Like the event stuff feels like an afterthought because if I use it to kind of do goal completion on the website, then I lose a lot of the goal completion tools. It just kind of shows me like, oh yeah, they came in and completed your goal and that's it. And like, that's not super interesting to me at least. Yeah. Even in e-commerce, which I think is maybe its sweet spot.
Yeah. Well, the event stuff is in fact an afterthought. Like that came in later, you know, mm-hmm. from the original product. So.
Yeah. I don't play a lot in this space necessarily and never really have for clients. So, I mean, even when I was doing Meeting Hero stuff, they were using, I want to say Mixpanel maybe. Like we had something installed where we were firing off events and they were kind of doing this whole data-driven decision-making for development. And we would code up a feature and then stick an event on it somewhere to show that it was being used. For instance, we added a copy-paste button or a copy-to-clipboard button, and we added the event tracking there to see if people were even using that. And it turned out they were, right? So we were able to find out that data. And it was something like 25% of the user base started using it after we put it out. So, I mean, that's interesting data. But I feel like after installing Astronomer, it was very almost mind-boggling to see all the different services that are out there now, you know, like Heap, or I mean, there were so many that I hadn't even heard of Gosh,
what are you still using that one that I showed you for that replaced Google Analytics on the Media Club website?
Did you talk about Crazy Egg?
Yeah.
Yeah, but then, you know, like I was down there after we installed it and I was telling Rye, like, oh yeah, heat maps are kind of nice. And then he showed me Hotjar and that thing is crazy. So it tracks, like, you can actually, you get video recordings that you can play back and it shows like where their mouse is moving on the page as they're scrolling around. Like, dude, it's really creepy.
I think it's such an awesome tool. Like Hotjar is such an awesome tool early stage and it's free too, to actually see the users. Like you can tell exactly what they're thinking. Like you get into their brain all of a sudden. It's like watching someone navigate on an app. Like you're looking over their shoulder and not talking and you realize like, oh, the you've got wrong in the product, you know, like they're looking, you could tell they're looking for the docs link and they can't see it, you know?
Yeah.
You know, so I actually think that's and it's just a tool that just came out. And so you couldn't possibly know about it. And there's so much noise. Like we know there's like 1800 different tools that want your user data. That's a crazy, yeah. So part of what we're trying to do with Astronomer is figure out a way to help people navigate and discover the right tools. That's a hard problem, but we can do it by talking to people at least in the short term. And maybe we build it into the product over time.
I'm on the Hotjar website right now and it looks awesome.
Yeah.
And I'm blown away by one feature.
Yeah.
They actually used a word cloud and it's the first time I've seen a word cloud that like I would use, like it has value. You know, those word clouds that used to be on the side of like WordPress sites of like bigger words, the more you use it or that.
Yep.
That actually makes sense in analytics.
you can do a lot of that stuff. Also still with Mixpanel, like one of the things, the two basic features are tracking events, but also identifying users. So you can record who, you know, if you've got people logging in or having identified themselves in some way, even by having submitted a, you know, any kind of mailing list sign up form or whatever. Well, okay, let's talk about the case where you know who they are because they've signed in. Then you can see if they have done a certain thing. So if you're exploring like why a certain feature that you thought was really awesome is not being used, you can actually ask people, like you can see who's using it and what other things that they've done. And then I think one of the most important things that you could actually do for a new product is actually just contact your users and talk to them and ask them why they're doing things, why they're not.
You know, I've used Intercom before too. Have you used that, Paul?
No, we haven't used it, but I think we should be. We've always built in like some just basic, like lifecycle emails and things into all our apps. But I actually think that we should be using Intercom.
Yeah. I think Intercom lets you tie to like the user account, like, and they'll collect that information. Like you send it from your application and then you can, if you use their JavaScript, like it integrates like chat windows that are basically like a little email system going back and forth. And you know who we should have also invited on was Ian Serlin. I think they're working on something as well. That would have been interesting. But yeah, I mean, there's a lot of interesting things to like do with this data. And I'm not even sure, like, how do I even know which things I want to glue together, right? Like for me, I use Drip and I use MailChimp and like I've got Crater and now like I've got, I don't even remember which service I set up. It was Amplitude. I set up Amplitude, but I don't even know what to do with that data. You know, like what's the interesting thing for me in there?
You probably don't even know what data you're looking for or what questions you even want to ask, which is actually why I think Astronomer sounds like a really interesting thing. Mm-hmm. Right. Tell us about Astronomer.
The word Astronomer is a couple of different things. Number one, it's a data hub service, but we also named our Meteor package Astronomer too, which probably was a dumb thing, but you know, we're early stage. We're allowed to make mistakes. But the Astronomer Meteor package does automatic event collection. So the theory would be there should be a way to instrument a Meteor app by wrapping the framework, essentially, like all the different pieces of it, so that you don't have to do that work over and over, you know, because there's certain patterns in Meteor that are common, like Meteor methods and, you know, the router changes. Like, you probably should track that stuff, right? And so that's what we're doing. We're basically wrapping those things. We've had a request recently like to have an option to just track all the UI interactions too, because people want to know, like, did they click this button or did they click that button? And now the problem with our approach is it's a lot of data. And so you know, there might be hundreds of different events in a larger app. So that now you've got the needle in the haystack problem of which events matter. I actually believe that over the next few years, there's going to be some tools that emerge, you know, maybe we work on it, maybe somebody else does, that takes kind of like all that raw data and applies machine learning to it to help answer questions rather than you having to manually set up, you know, which events to track and what the funnels matter. And just basically, I'm impressed by Code Climate, for example. I don't know if you guys have ever used Code Climate that kind of grades your code as you change it and sends you updates like, oh, you just turned that class from a C to a D. I think it'd be really cool if your analytics tool just told you, hey, you guys just kind of screwed up your retention over the past few weeks. It used to be here and now it's down to here. And, you know, getting that feedback as early as you can as the app's changing or as the marketing is changing. You know, there's all kinds of change happening all the time. I don't know. I'm kind of off on a tangent, but the point I'm making is like, I think that the approach of just tracking a few things makes sense in one world, but I think the world we're heading towards tracking everything could be more valuable.
Yeah. So it's like big data.
Yep. It's creating big data. Yeah.
We can create the big data now, but the piece you're talking about is like analyzing that big data in a smart way that is like, I don't know, doesn't make you think about it.
Yeah, but I said recently, like in a blog post, someone quoted it, which I was like, oh, that was actually a smart thing. So you can't analyze data you don't have, right? So unless you have the data, you're out of luck. So I mean, that's my thought is like, it's so cheap to store data these days. Like, why not have a copy of it, you know?
Yeah. So like, I'm curious because now that I've set up Astronomer, you mentioned that it'll play back that data into other services. Like, is that a thing you guys do now or is that a thing you plan to do?
So one of the building blocks is done. Like, so like we have Creator running on Astronomer now. And so every event that happens on Creator is being logged into S3 right now, into a folder. And so theoretically, if you turn on Kissmetrics, we can literally just take that data and replay it through our engine, you know, because most of these APIs let you say, like, when did the event happen, you know? And so we should be able to just stream that data right back through as if it was happening on the days back then when it happened. So we haven't built that. We'll have to build an integration. Well, I don't know. There's like nuances with each service. Like, some services let you do that, some don't. So we'll have to have some documentation around that at least. But in theory, it's actually pretty easy for us to take a chunk of that historical data and just pop it right back through the funnel. And if we can pull that off, I think it'll be a really cool feature, you know, because it sucks to try new tools. Like, you install a new tool and then you're like, okay, I guess I have to wait 3 weeks to get at least a little bit of data.
Right.
It'd be nice if you could just send the past 3 weeks, you know, and that happens in 10 minutes, you know. I did a blog post this weekend that kind of updates our progress. I think I posted it on Creator, so you could subscribe to that on Medium if you want to keep up with what I'm doing, what we're doing.
What are you guys needing right now? Are you guys looking to build a team or something like that? All the guys that are listening on this podcast?
Actually, we're up to 6 people now. We're getting ready to go through an accelerator, which will be exciting. Yeah, so I think really like in the winter or spring, we'll be planning on ramping up. It's interesting though, like the Meteor work for us isn't like, I don't even think it's the hard part. Like, a Meteor is so easy to build. First of all, let's just get that right out of the way. Like, Meteor is awesome. Like, building apps in Meteor for us now is old hat and it's pretty awesome and easy. The hard stuff for us is all this back end stuff. So we're looking for like people who know or are super interested in the AWS, you know, becoming gurus of the modern like AWS infrastructure stuff.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Very cool.
Sounds like there'd be fun problems to solve.
Mm-hmm. There are, and it's kind of fun to solve them within the context of having AWS as your backbone because it feels really solid, you know? I mean, there's a lot of complexity there, but we're also going to try to build out tools for other platforms. So Meteor was first, and of course it's first in our heart. But, you know, the Ruby guys and the React people and all those, I mean, I know React and Meteor are kind of closer to synonymous these days, but yeah, we want to basically help people in other development communities with the same thing. It's way harder in everything else than Meteor though, you know, because Meteor is the only one that kind of has a full stack.
It's got some standards too, right? I mean, like, if I install the user accounts, you know how that works. Whereas in Rails land, like, user accounts are up to the implementation that you decide to adopt.
Yeah. There are some like major players there, but so we could probably build to that standard, you know, to like the top two or three user. The interesting thing that I'm kind of surprised about is I talk to people now who are like, oh yeah, I'm using Rails. I'm like, yeah, but you're probably doing a bunch of JavaScript. They're like, no, not really. It's like, everything's on the server. I'm like, man, really? That's how you're building apps in 2015?
Yeah, right. What year are we in?
Yeah, like, people are still doing it, you know. So I don't know. I kind of don't want to support those people. I want those people to just die out.
Yeah, but once you get everything perfect for like one community or one technology, then you know it's just a matter of like supporting other stuff. Like for example, New Relic, which is like data collection and logging and monitoring for backend. I think that started with Rails.
Yep.
And they because they focused on one platform, they were able to know what is a database. Well, I mean, I guess they were just able to understand like when you're in a controller, when it's view, what you're doing with the database. And so for you guys, I think the idea of automatically collecting events, because you can understand what people are doing, like, you know, what's a method call. Right. It's not just generic JavaScript. So you can do it all automatically.
Yeah. I'm hoping that there's just other opinionated, like the mean stack. Like maybe there's, like I know, and I've never actually built a Node app before I started doing Meteor, but apparently in Node, there is kind of like a standard, you know, there's kind of a standard user package, NPM package that people generally use server side on that. And, you know, so I'm thinking like what we'll just do is go like, it might just be like opinionated stacks, you know, by opinionated stack, kind of like LAMP, you know, but only if there's enough of an opinion in there that there's some standardization that we can get our hands around.
Yeah. I really like the idea of automatically recording events because honestly, it's something that I've actually seen people get wrong a lot. So like, a lot of times you'll be like, we can't compare this data to that because there was a bug and we forgot to track that event or whatever. And so, so with you guys just doing it automatically, I think that would probably solve that problem for the most part.
Yeah.
And for our package, we automatically record sign in, sign out, and page views, but you still have to manually add like a call to analytics.track with some custom text, you know, just a little string or whatever that you have to put that in on every event handler for something that you want to happen.
Yeah.
So it's flexible, and that's kind of what most people end up doing, but you can get it wrong. So I like the idea of having it recorded everywhere. You ignore the ones that you don't care about and you just filter and pay attention to the ones you do.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And like in new features are automatically instrumented too. That's the other thing that's pretty nice is a lot of times, like you build a new feature and then someone's like, we need to add some, you know, and like 2 weeks later you do that finally. And so it's just cruft. It's stuff you don't feel like doing. Devs hate that task. Right. So especially when someone says, oh, and can we also push to this other tool? And you're like, no, we can't, I'm not doing that.
Well, that was an early problem, right? Like I remember you guys working with Gladwell and like they were set up on Kissmetrics and I don't think they were doing tracking quite right. And like you guys were helping them get that set up correctly. And then there was like a question mark around, well, what about this other service? And then there was no way to like go back and track all that data after the fact.
Yeah. And I just got an email from Gladwell. I mean, we've actually engaged with them 3 times, like getting it set up initially. Then they asked us to move them over to Kissmetrics and paid us $1,000 to like, you know, instrument the app for that. And then more recently, I just got an email from him. He's like, I'm spending $600 on Kiss and $600 on MailChimp. And like, am I spending my money right? Can you help? You know? So I think a lot of people are in that situation. Once they hit a little bit of traction, they get out of the free plans on some of these things. And then they really question their decisions because they really didn't make a decision. They just implemented a free tool, you know? Mm-hmm.
And the cool thing with the Strameter, is everything's on S3. So like you got the data and like you said, you can like bring it in and out. You could switch things in. Nothing's locked in.
Yep.
Standard format you'll be working with.
And we're giving you direct access to that data too, you know, so if you want to do other stuff with it, like that's the other thing I think is important is analytics within your product is becoming, like, I call it analytics as a feature. It's a pretty compelling feature, right? Like if you can, let's take Crater, let's take Telescope. And if me as a user, if I can click in and say, show me my posts and how many views they had and how much traction they've had, I'm logging into Crater way more often, right? Just because I'm vain and I want to see how my stuff does. Like those analytics is a few, like, but unless you have that event data near your app, I don't think it should be in your app database, by the way, but it should be somewhere you can access it. Like those features are actually really cool. So I think it more and more like developers and product owners are going to realize the power of building in analytics into their product for their own users.
Mm-hmm. That's interesting you say that, because I mean, we do, Sasha does track that kind of information and it is in the app database, but it's actually broken at the moment.
Oh.
But he fixed it in the develop version. I just haven't gotten it up there. Oh, but Okay. Yeah, I think maybe the more interesting thing is like, oh, hey, user X really likes your stuff. You know, like they always upvote your posts and click on your stuff. And like that would also be interesting. Like, yeah. You know, hey, here's their Twitter account. You guys should follow each other or something. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. Data is, you know, it just provides connective tissue for that, all that kind of stuff. Like that'd be a great feature. If Crater emailed me periodically saying, here's some people who like your stuff recently.
It's like the Twitter emails you get, like, hey, look what's popular on your network.
Yep. Yeah, things like that. Quora is probably my favorite example of like masterful use of data to re-engage me. It's like amazing how they like send me a list of like, hey, you should answer these questions. And I'm like, yes, I want to answer all those questions. And I end up spending an hour in the morning doing that instead of my work. Damn you, Quora.
That's awesome. So in the future, Siri is going to be able to answer all your questions about your app. You just ask it and Siri will answer back, but it's all going to be based on the data that Raya is storing for you.
That's right.
Hey, Siri, who did not upvote my Crater post?
Nice.
Yeah. Well, it's funny. We are talking to the Watson. I know a guy who works at Watson, IBM Watson, and we're trying to figure out, like, what can we do? And I'm like, I don't know, probably anything, but I have to prioritize. So it's just getting the data in a spot is like step number one. That's my theory on all this, is that we're in a new era of in analytics, the machine learning stuff, like all these cloud services now, like actually AWS has a machine learning tool. Watson has this developer hub now where you can access and plug into their stuff. That's on the cloud now. Prediction.io is another really cool company that is doing this. We just need a little bit of time. And I think what we can do is, you know, essentially if you look at a user's visitor pattern, like as a DNA strand, essentially, they did these 100 things, you know, so far. You should be able to take that data and like predict how likely they are to do the next thing. I mean, there's like, that's not even a question like that they do that kind of stuff right now in other domains. And I think that'll come to the world of user analytics relatively soon.
When we're talking about like Watson and the central brain that will be able to analyze everything. Mm-hmm. Who was it? Gary Vaynerchuk, I think, said, the art of marketing is like going away and now it's just going to be like a science of selling, like a total science. Mm-hmm. And it's not there yet, but it's like heading that way. And so my question is, all this data that you're collecting, Rye, it will be really valuable to like that take over the world kind of guy who wants like all the data of all the people that, like, I think his name is Mark Zuckerberg.
Yeah,
that guy.
Well, think about Google for a second. Google Analytics is installed on 28 million sites, you know? Like, holy crap.
Yeah. Are they, like, recording everything, or they're just recording what people...
Who knows what they're... I think they're recording everything. If you think about it, like, they can be recording whatever they want with that.
But with yours, you'll be recording everything, but it's structured.
Yeah, it's structured. And we'll know which users, and therefore we know. I mean, actually, inside of Astronomer, we don't even have any users are IDs, essentially. So I don't know the identity of anybody. But if you push the identity through, then I guess technically we would have that. I mean, that's an interesting question, though, Ben, because like the other thing I believe is that I think that there are, like, using a tool like Segment makes sense maybe at some stage. But at some point, you want to have all that stuff essentially in-house. You know, you don't want to have guys like me having access to your data. So we're actually building our technology, Astronomer, so that it's deployable within your AWS account so that you have an island of your own data. And I think that there's a lot of companies that would actually prefer that over a pure SaaS service. You know?
Yes. That's what I was getting at.
Yeah. And like, so yeah, it's in our
roadmap. There's two paths to take. Yeah. Cause otherwise, if you store it, then pretty much you could like tell people, like when they go to the pricing page, you could be like, well, we pay you to use our app because then we sell that data.
Yeah. That sounds so like
how many users you got.
Let's make a deal. Come on.
Yeah.
Forget about it. Seriously, as a market. Yeah. I mean, maybe that's an option. But I really don't think, I don't know. I don't think that way at this point. I don't know what I would do with that data that wouldn't be shady. So
he's got to see the dollar signs before he'll pony up with it.
Yes. send me an email, Ben. Let's talk about this.
We're coming to a new era of data. And when we have all that data, like, what do we choose to do with it? How do we choose to store it? Who's in control of it? And that's like, we're racing there.
Yeah.
And we're not answering that question just yet. But Rye, I think you, man, like talking to you, it's pretty exciting. You got me pumped about the future of analytics. And
yeah,
it seems like you got a good direction of and handle of where everything's going. And man, killer product.
Thanks, man. Yeah. So like another thing you guys have probably noticed, like the retargeting thing, that you visit some app and then all of a sudden that that company's like popping up everywhere you go on the internet, they're there. I mean,
they want to reactivate you.
Yeah. That means there's creepy stuff going on. I recently listened to a podcast with, Dan Carlin. I don't know if you guys have ever listened to the Common Sense podcast. It's a really cool podcast, but he was just talking about this problem of privacy versus, you know, the benefits of all this connected data. And it's almost like an unsolvable problem. You know, the privacy thing is real. It's a problem. You know, if someone gets hacked, you know, all this stuff's they all centralized. That kind of sucks. But at the same time, what are you going to do? Go back to caveman days and not have it? I don't know.
Well, it brings up a good point. Like the marketing, or I'm sorry, the media sometimes bends things. Mm. So if we got this whole like developer nerd world on the side where this is like standard, no big scary thing, nothing.
Right.
But if it like comes to the forefront of people who are less technical, and it's like, do you know how much data Facebook has on you? And by the way, look, this whole secret group of developers, have been doing this for so long. They've been having all your data. They own you.
Yeah.
Everyone's going to be like crucify them.
Well, I mean, it is really, really creepy when you think about it. Mm-hmm. Like, if you read up on some of the stuff that Facebook is doing, like they definitely are the king of user analytics, and like it's in their best interest to figure out who you pay attention to the most, right? Because they want your eyeballs on their site. And if they know that you're going to lunch down the street and like you both have Facebook installed on your phones and like they can see like, oh, Ryan, Josh sat together for, you know, 30 minutes the other day at this location. Like there's some really interesting things that they've learned from that. And like, they're just amassing this huge amount of data on people. And they're even able to tell, like, if you take a picture and people get tagged in it, they can start to figure out people that aren't tagged, like who they are. And even if they don't have a Facebook account, they can start to figure out like that they're appearing in these pictures and they're associated with these people. And there's a lot of interesting things you can do with that data.
Yeah. Yeah. Who took the Facebook data years back and they would put like a webcam at the entrance of a business? And you would walk in, they'd automatically check you in because they took they had facial recognition of public Facebook photos. And then they were able to determine your user and then check you in.
I'm going to go make my aluminum foil hat now.
I know. You guys are making me feel guilty now. I feel like I'm part of some evil conspiracy.
Well.
by the way, one other recommendation. I don't know if you guys are watching the show Mr. Robot, but it's about...
Yes. Oh, yes. Yes. Yes.
That is awesome. Did you get that in Canada, Paul?
No, I haven't seen it, but I'm going to check it out now.
Well, it's on the USA Network.
I'm sure we do, but... We do have this thing called BitTorrent.
Oh, okay.
There you go. That's the appropriate way to watch it, I think. Once you get into the show, you'll understand.
Yeah. Totally.
It's awesome.
Totally. Yeah.
The funny thing is that's the most technically accurate show or movie I've ever seen in my entire life. You know, like you see Swordfish or Hackers or something like that, and it's like terrible. And like they never get the technology right, but Mr. Robot does. So
well, hackers totally got it right, especially the end scene, zooming through all those like digital towers and everything.
Funny.
So that's what it's like. Okay, grow at least. I don't know what you guys are working on. Cool, cool. Well, I had a lot of fun.
Yeah, me too.
So awesome. I'm kind of curious to get Paul's take. Like you mentioned, you guys do like mixed panel for your customers, kind of out of the gate. Is that your standard recommendation then for someone getting started with this stuff?
Yeah, we haven't been super adventurous in the recent years. Like I know this stuff has changed a lot, and I think Ryan knows probably a lot more about what is common. Like if I would do anything else, I would probably do segment and then let them just choose, because segment, I guess kind of like astronomer, so lets you, they're kind of like a middleman for the data and they will send it to whatever service you choose. And then as an owner of the app and not necessarily as a developer, you can just like go into their admin panel and just turn on and off integrations with other services.
Mm-hmm.
So our Atmosphere package for analytics, it lets you use most of the common backend services, but directly like as a client side thing. So there's a tiny bit of configuration you would need to do to switch services.
Yeah.
But honestly, we haven't been very adventurous. Like it's just been Mixpanel kind of does the job, and we had Google Analytics as a standard thing. So that's.
Well, I was going to throw out really interestingly, like we're actually using Analytics.js too. So we have a Analytics.js integration. So theoretically you could use Paul's analytics package and send the data that you've manually instrumented to Astronomer through that Analytics.js plugin. So we should try that, Paul.
Yeah, we definitely should. Yeah.
I forgot about that idea. There's so many different integration things. Like I also want to talk to Aaron Oda about like, you know, we could make it when Kadira loads, he's probably collecting more data than, is not the same data that we could use to push over to Astronomer too.
Yeah.
I need to talk to him someday here soon. I'm hoping that we'll be influential in helping like create some pretty awesome, an awesome analytics story within the Meteor community. That's stronger than any other community, you know, since this is our home base, but it'll take a few months or so to get to the point where it's clean enough, you know?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I like that, like the value proposition that you give to developers. Like you guys are working so much on developing your app and everything's going to be data driven in the future. It's data driven now, but even more so in the future. And this helps you future proof it in a very easy way.
Yep.
Yeah. And Sam Hatoum and I were talking about this the other day too, because having more data around your application allows you to do more interesting things. Like for instance, if Kadira could track, like right now it does error tracking, but if you could track when you do deploys and then compare, did the error rate go up or down as a result of the deploy, or did it stay exactly the same? Like you can start to rely on that as a metric for doing continuous deployment, which means like, you know, if you're writing some tests for your code and you check it in and like master build is green and it like auto deploys for you to the application, like you should get notified within 15 minutes of the deploy whether things look good or not, you know? Mm. And that's really interesting. And I've seen other instances of that too, where like, you know, probably the more famous story I've heard is Amazon tracks order rates as a metric for whether their system's working or not. And during the, not this last World Cup, but the one before it, Germany was playing in a game and all of a sudden the German kind of Amazon site, like it just stopped. They stopped getting orders and they couldn't figure out why. And they thought like the site was broken or something, but it just turned out everybody was literally watching the soccer game. that looked like the site went down to them because that's how they were metricing it. So
yeah, that's funny.
Yeah.
That's wild. Soccer.
Who knew? Well, this was awesome. I want to say thank you to everyone for coming on and chatting.
Yeah, great for me too to have a chance to tell the story a little bit.
And so if anyone hasn't yet, you should definitely go check out astronomer.io. It was literally one of the easiest packages I've ever installed for Meteor. I think The 4 minutes and 20 seconds mostly consisted of waiting on Atmosphere and the Meteor package server to send me stuff.
Yeah.
Cool. So should we do picks?
Yes. Yes.
Awesome.
Picks.
All right. Well, I'll let you guys think about it for a second, but I'm super stoked that my wife brought something home this weekend from Costco called Essential Amino Energy. And it's just like a mix. And I don't know, bodybuilders use it or something like that. I'm not a bodybuilder by any means. But
not yet.
No.
Let's see you after a week of taking this stuff.
I want to get ripped together. Okay. So essentially she's like, hey, try this out. This should replace Red Bull and coffee. I'm like, all right. So I read it. And it has caffeine. It has the same stuff that Red Bull has. It has zero sugar. And I try it. And it's like amazing. It tastes way better. And so like, I'm addicted to it now. And if I walk through an airport going somewhere, cause like I'll bring it now everywhere I go, but it literally looks like cocaine that I'm bringing with me. So, and now how I'm describing it, like I have energy, I'm excited, da, 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 da. I don't know. Maybe I should read the directions a little bit more, but amino energy is very cool. I like it. Better than chewing coffee beans, which that's what I was doing last week.
Yeah, I feel like there's a plot change. Suddenly, it really is cocaine though, the whole time.
Surprise!
Read that on the news.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
You guys go.
All right, I'll go. So we just got a new car. We got a 2015 Nissan Pathfinder. Since both Wendy and I work from home, we were paying two car payments and we just decided like, let's just get rid of them both and go down to one. Cause there's rarely an instance where we both need a car. And if that's the case, like one of us will just take an Uber or something, you know, like that's a thing we can do now. We thought the logic out and then we ended up at the dealership like Friday night at 5 PM. I'm sure these guys hate us, you know, for those people that come in, and we just went to look at the Rogue and the back seat, like we're like, I don't know, we've got three kids, so will they fit in it? And so we had our daughter get in the back seat and it's like, I don't, it's a joke. Like, I don't even think my 13-pound dog would fit in that back seat. But so
yeah. And the roof is low on those as well.
Yeah. And so we drove the Pathfinder and we're like, oh my God, this car is amazing. And so we ended up buying it that night. We probably have like sucker written on our forehead or something, but I think we got a decent deal. And, but no, like we just took it on a road trip and it's like super comfortable and feels all futuristic. And I don't know. I'm very, very happy with that. So that's my pick of the week.
Very cool.
Wow.
Nice. I don't think mine can top that. It was just a book. So I read a really good sci-fi book recently. And it's by Neal Stephenson, who wrote a bunch of good books like Cryptonomicon and various other things.
Snow Crash.
Old one. Snow Crash, which was one of his like original sci-fi books.
Yes.
But I think his work has become a lot more sophisticated as the years have gone by. And the thing about Neal Stephenson is he's like super obsessive about researching and details. And he now writes these books that are like always at least 1,000 pages long. And I think when he wrote Cryptonomicon, which was about like late 90s hacker and startup sort of a story, I think he actually like wrote it on a Unix computer of some sort and like actually like typeset it with LaTeX or something. I don't know. He went really crazy. And then he wrote a historical novel after that. And I think I recall reading in the notes that he actually wrote it with like a quill pen. It's insane because it's three novels that are like each over 1,000 pages. Anyway, so the book that I read this summer was called Seven Eves. Well, I don't know how many pages it is because it was on Kindle, but it was pretty long. And it's like it's a sci-fi book about kind of like the end of the world a little bit. And it's about, there's a lot about like orbital mechanics and actually genetics and a whole bunch of really crazy stuff. It was awesome.
Nice. Yeah, I like him.
That's awesome.
Yeah, Seven Eves, Neal Stephenson.
I'm going to have to read that now.
Yeah, totally.
I'm like 10% into my current novel on my Kindle, so I have to wait a little bit, but it sounds really interesting. Gosh, man, you guys were prepared for recommendations. I feel like I blew all mine during the podcast. So
you can reuse it. We're cool with that.
Nah,
you could recommend Astronomer if you want.
Oh, well, I not only do I recommend Astronomer, but like I will personally like G hang out with you, getting it set up on your app if you need some help on it, if you need to like figure out this analytics stuff. Like seriously, we've got like, I'm all about getting apps on it, getting active apps. A key metric for me is how many events we're processing per hour. And so reach out to me. That's pretty self-serving, but that's my recommendation.
Awesome. Nice. I'm going to try it.
Yeah, we definitely will.
All right, cool.
All right, teams. Guys. We'll have a great rest of the day.
Yeah.
Thanks, guys.
All right, thanks.
Talk to you soon.
Bye.
Bye.
This podcast has been a Meteor Club production. You can find out more information about Meteor Club at meteorjs.club. It's pretty easy to join the mailing list and stay in the loop. Again, that's meteorjs.club.